Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. He talks tough. He's outrageous. He enjoys insulting other nations and politicians. He told President Obama to go to hell, and enough voters like him to make him president. We're talking about Rodrigo Duterte, president of the Philippines. He promised and has delivered a vicious campaign to kill off drug users and dealers, claims to have killed some himself. Meanwhile, he seems to be doing a little Asia pivot of his own away from longstanding ally America and toward a superpower closer to home, China. This hour, On Point, the Philippines' new strongman, President Rodrigo Duterte. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you been following this controversial, confrontational new president of the Philippines? The blood, the bluster, could he change the balance of power in the Pacific? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Filipino Americans, we know there are a lot of you out there, and we know President Duterte is a hot topic in your communities. So call us and tell us what you do or do not like about this man. Joining me now, first from Manila in the Philippines via Skype, is Maria Ressa, CEO of the journalism and social media website Rappler, said to be the third most popular news and social media website in the Philippines. She was a CNN correspondent and bureau chief there for nearly 20 years, first in Manila and then in Jakarta. She's interviewed Rodrigo Duterte and more than once. Maria, great to have you with us. Thanks for staying up so late in Manila.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us when he came to power and something about his background.
Rodrigo Duterte has never lost an election. He has won every single election he has gone through since 1988. He is very self-assured. He believes he knows what works. And when he ran for president of the Philippines, he focused on three factors. He said he was going to stop corruption, stop criminality, in his words, and he would fix government. And by his supporters' count, he is doing all these things in the 6 months he's been in power.
There's also been a lot of killing in that time. 2,000 or so killed by police and 3,000 or so more killers unidentified. How is this part of his crackdown on drugs?
Well, part of what's made him, and he's said this from the very beginning, part of what's made him successful in his hometown in Davao as mayor of Davao has been that he is willing to kill. And since taking office, since July 1, which is really when his war on drugs began, the Philippine National Police says that more than 6,000 people, a total number of people killed since July 1. You're talking about more than 2,000 who were killed in police operations. And according to the police's own count, more than 4,000 people in extrajudicial or vigilante style killings.
So what does this mean, that people are just being shot because police or vigilantes, are they affiliated with the police, just believe that they're involved in the drug trade, so bang, dead?
These are deaths. The police now classify them as deaths under investigation, but this is part of what's, you know, in 6 months, how much things have changed in the Philippines, what his critics have called a culture of impunity. In fact, it's the president himself who pushes the police to go out after these criminals, the drug dealers and pushers. He has said that he would protect the police when they do this, and the police themselves are out every night. And if you look at the death toll, you're talking about an average of more than 30 people killed every night. How are Filipinos reacting? I mean, the most surprising thing is that more Filipinos are not up in arms in the streets about this high crime rate. And I think to understand that, you have to look at Filipinos themselves. What does his election show about the Philippines? He won campaigning on this zeitgeist of change, campaigning against the oligarchs, and he's used that oftentimes during the campaign. He wanted to shift power to the people. He is a populist president who has come out with populist policies, and he makes poorer Filipinos feel they have a voice in government.
He was mayor for many years of Davao City in the southern Philippine province of Mindanao, which has a whole profile of issues of its own. But he has bragged about, during that time, killing, extrajudicial killing, I guess, himself, or at least looking for confrontations in which he could kill suspected criminals. Here he was. This is just last Monday. Now, of course, you've heard this, but he was in front of a crowd in Manila last Monday, said that when he was mayor of the southern Philippine city of Davao City, he used to personally kill suspects without trial.
In Davao, I used to do it personally, just to show to the guys that if I can do it, why can't you? And I go around Davao with a motorcycle, with a big bike, and I would just patrol the streets and looking for trouble also. Tagla naghanap ako ng inkwento para makapatay.
President of the Philippines saying, I just did it. I'd go out looking for trouble and I would kill. It's not just domestically that he's talked tough. Here he was. This was in October, turning his trademark tough talk on the U.S. president. He was angered by American criticism of his anti-drug campaign.
Instead of helping us, ang unang tumira itong State Department. So, you can go to hell. Mr. Obama, you can go to hell.
Mr. Obama, you can go to hell. Who does he answer to? Only Filipinos, he said.
I am a president of a sovereign state. And we have long ceased to be a colony. I do not have any master except the Filipino people. Nobody but nobody.
Maria Reza joins us from Manila in the Philippines. Of course, that's fair enough. He's president of the Philippines. But what is the character of this man who is out there? You know, he said, he's quoted as saying, Hitler massacred 3 million Jews. Now there are 3 million drug addicts. I'd be happy to slaughter them. Of course, it's 6 million. But anyway, he's got that. He called President Obama son of a whore. I'll curse you in the forum. He told the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court there in the Philippines, you know, don't order me around, or would you rather have martial law? Joked about an Australian missionary who was raped and murdered by inmates in a prison riot in Davao when he was mayor there. He said, I was angry because she was raped. That's one thing, but she was so beautiful. The mayor should have been first. He called the Pope. He said, son of a whore, go home. Don't visit us again. How do Philippines process all this, Maria?
You know, when you put it all together like that, it sounds really insane, right? But if you look at him in the context of who he is and the leadership that Davao City, so you're talking about Davao City in the southern Philippines, it's actually the world's largest city, and his leadership helped transform Davao from the chaos of the 1980s, where it was essentially a safe haven for criminals and rebels, to what residents now proclaim as an oasis of peace. And he did this through being himself, I think, and this played well to social media. He is who he is. He is unapologetically so. He's a macho leader. His supporters call him a man's man. Tough talking, plain talking. He is irreverent, and he says what he means, and he carries through. If you look, even his claims of having killed people, this isn't the first time he said it. And he said this even while he was campaigning. He actually told me in an interview October last year that he killed 3 people personally. Again, that sets him apart from the other candidates who ran for office, right? He is willing to kill to accomplish what he said he would do, to stop corruption, stop crime, and fix government. And then he turns around and he also says he'll threaten you, and at the same time, he'll charm you. So in Davao, the Davaoenos stand by him. Not only did he had almost a 99% voting record. The people of Davao voted for him as president. And you have 16 million out of 54 million Filipino voters voting for him as president.
And then there's the Philippines and their relationship with superpowers. Of course, the Philippines was an American colony, long an ally of the United States, American bases there for a long time. Ultimately, those pulled out of the Philippines, but American forces have been back under a new agreement in recent years. Here was President Duterte on Saturday after one U.S. agency, the Millennium Challenge Corporation, decided to pull a planned aid package, to put it on hold. Philippines don't need your money, he said. We can turn to China.
China said they will provide so many, and we will give you the money. So bye-bye, America, and work on the protocols that will eventually move you out from the Philippines.
Maria Ressa, there in the Philippines, in Manila. I mean, the U.S. and much of the world have been up in arms about China having building up some reefs in the South China Sea. Is there a real prospect of them aligning with the Philippines or the Philippines with China that would make the Philippines essentially into a potential China outpost where American forces have for so long been so familiar?
You know, this is he's pivoted the Philippines from its long relationship, its alliance with the United States, and moved it closer to China, and that is creating a massive shift in the South China Sea controversy. This is what he claims he is going to do. And again, this is not a surprise, right? While he was a candidate for president, he told people that he was going to pivot this country away from the United States towards China. You can see he is this man of contradictions. He also said he campaigned on maintaining the rule of law. At the same time, he boasted that he is willing to kill people, so he breaks the law in order to bring order. I think the problem that we're seeing now is the unpredictability of some of the statements he makes now that he is a world leader, now that he is the president of the Philippines. When he makes statements like this, and oftentimes without institutional support, the institutions catch up with him. It means that both the Philippines and its allies have to interpret what he says and how it will play out.
The United States outfit there pulling or putting on hold something like $500 million in potential aid. China not so long ago offering almost exactly the same, $500 million in long-term soft loans and straight up millions in military equipment. We're talking this hour about the Philippines' controversial, confrontational, self-proclaimed killer, President Rodrigo Duterte. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the Philippines' controversial, confrontational, self-proclaimed killer, President Rodrigo Duterte. He's cozying up to China, bucking the U.S., and sanctioning widespread vigilante killing in his home country, the Philippines. You can join us. How do you see the eruption of vigilante justice that's exploded around Rodrigo Duterte, the thousands of extrajudicial killing? And what do you make of his own claim to be a proud murderer of suspected criminals over the years? What do you think Beijing sees in this Filipino president? Could Duterte really realign from the U.S. to China? Is he already doing it? And what would that mean for the balance of power in Asia around the South China Sea? Here was Rodrigo Duterte in October 2015 talking with my guest Maria Ressa. She is CEO of the journalism and social media website Rappler in the Philippines. He was still mayor of Davao City then, but aiming for the presidency. Maria asked him about his war on drugs and crime, and he made a startling confession.
So no qualms about killing killers?
Yes, of course. I must admit that I have killed. They 3 months early on, I killed about 3 people.
Yeah, a few there. Thousands since he took the presidency of the Philippines. And here he was in October in China in the Great Hall of the People in Beijing, said, look, America's not the most powerful economy in the world. Not anymore.
How can you be the most powerful industrial country when you owe China and you are not paying it for almost $3 trillion.
Yeah, how can you be so powerful when you owe China and you're not paying it on all that trillions in debt? Here he was, same visit, saying, well, he's ready to separate from the United States.
Your Honors, in this venue, I announce my separation from the United States.
Maria Ressa is with us from The Rappler in the Philippines, joining us today from Manila. With us right now as well from Boynton, Florida, Karen Brooks, Adjunct Senior Fellow for Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations, former Director for Asian Affairs on the National Security Council under George W. Bush, travels to the Philippines monthly, working now for a private equity firm, investing in the healthcare business in that country. Karen Brooks, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And from Washington, Zachary Abuza joins us, professor at the National War College, focuses on Southeast Asian politics and security issues, author of Forging Peace in Southeast Asia. Zachary Abuza, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Karen Brooks, what do you make, first of all, of the killings in the Philippines? We're talking thousands, Maria is describing. Is this straight up, is it a crime by the president?
Well, I think the United States and other countries around the world have made clear their concerns about this campaign over the past 6 months. I think Maria's interview shows clearly that the president does not share those concerns and that he, in fact, was elected on a very clear platform to pursue this kind of campaign. And his popularity in the Philippines, which as of the latest polling remains at a quite astronomical 70-something percent, is very much a function of him delivering on his very promises.
You're there, and there often. Why do you think Filipinos have embraced this leader?
Well, I think Maria identified some of his characteristics that have been appealing to Filipinos. He's brash. He's tough-talking. In many cases, even potty-mouthed. As you noted, he has a proclivity for speaking impulsively, making shocking statements. But this has had its own charm factor in the Philippines. He's the antithesis of political correctness, coming on the heels of 6 years of a very urbane, soft-spoken, and sort of deliberative president in his predecessor, President Aquino. And Filipino voters clearly were ready for a change.
Zachary Abuza, can you see the Philippines under Duterte actually, in fact, turning away from the United States, turning toward China, embracing a relationship with a different great power?
Absolutely. But let me just make one quick comment on what Karen said. I don't think he has the mandate. He came to power in a five-way presidential race without a runoff. He only won about 34-35% of the vote. And though his polling numbers are high now, they are within the norm of what the four of the past five presidents had in their first 6 months. So let's see if he can deliver. But on the question of tilting towards China, this has been a real gift to Beijing that they were not anticipating. He is desperate after 6 years of very solid economic growth, around 6.5% a year. He certainly tapped into a feeling that the average Filipino was not benefiting from the economic growth. And he really thinks that China is going to provide major amounts of funding for Philippines' crumbling infrastructure or other development projects that will start to percolate down to the village level.
I mean, remind us of just what the situation here is. It was just last week we saw this Chinese naval vessel and it seized this U.S. Navy underwater drone not very far from Subic Bay in the Philippines, where American ships have been in and out for decades and decades, once home to a huge American base and still in there. This was a Fox News anchor interrupting a talk segment with the news of what happened there.
It's now being confirmed by the Pentagon. It says a Chinese warship has seized a U.S. Navy underwater drone that was collecting presumably unclassified data in the South China Sea. This is the same neck of the woods, you might recall, where the Chinese have, over the last couple of years, really been militarizing islands that technically didn't belong to them.
Zachary Abuza, Donald Trump was up in arms about that and then said, oh, what the heck, they can have it. This was affiliated with it, a civilian a Navy ship, but staffed by civilians. They said doing civilian research there. Chinese said this is in our faces. But if the U.S. and others have been concerned about Chinese putting military installments on reefs that they built up into little tiny islands in the South China Sea, can you imagine Subic Bay at some point being a Chinese military port of call, Zachary?
It's within the realm of possible now. Duterte's clearly leaning out to them. Last summer, you had a ruling by the Permanent Court of Arbitration when the previous government of the Philippines took China to this international court to make a ruling on this. And what the court found
A ruling on what? Sorry, Zachary.
Well, the ruling on China's claims to 80% of the South China Sea, what is called their nine-dash line.
Right.
And the court found two things. First, that the nine-dash line has no basis in international law. So they invalidated that. And they also said that these new islands that China's created are not natural islands, i.e. they don't deserve entitlements such as a 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone. And what that did was it then said it is de facto the Philippines which gets this 200 nautical mile exclusive economic zone off from their shores. And so the Chinese are not going to unbuild these islands. They're not going to back down. But what has been so shocking is that the Duterte administration has basically said, we are not going to push this ruling or decision on the ruling. And so he seems very happy with China building up these seven islands right off the Philippines coast.
What are the strategic implications for the United States, Japan, others, if China and the Philippines formally or informally ally, and never mind the six or half dozen little reef islands out there, if the Philippines itself, I've been to Subic Bay, that's an unbelievable port for naval operations. If this becomes part of China's orbit, formally or informally, or even just the islands continue to be built up, what are the strategic implications, Zach?
Well, we're talking about the South China Sea, which is one of the most heavily traveled waterways in the world. Trillions of dollars of trade through there that the Chinese have claimed. They really see it as part of their internal – as an internal lake rather than an international body of water. And the Chinese keep on talking about that they will say, we respect freedom of navigation, but they have very different interpretations of what freedom of navigation is. They do not believe that U.S. Navy has the right to transit these waters. You could even see it with the seizure of that underwater drone. That was actually outside of their nine-dash line, and they seized it anyway. So
the spokesman for the Ministry of Defense said, you know, it was carrying out reconnaissance military measurements in China's water. This is only 50 nautical miles from the Philippines, way the other side of the South China Sea.
Exactly, and you see so how overarching and expansive China's claims are. And so the real concern is that with these islands, and they have three airfields built up on these islands, that China will now be able to deny countries access to the entire South China Sea. They could cut off trade. Should they be angry at you, they could cut off maritime traffic. They certainly do not want the Americans conducting underwater research, such as trying to figure out where China might be bunkering nuclear submarines.
Would it be the beginning of the end of U.S. Pacific, I don't know, super presence? If he's saying, I will kick you out, the United States. I will embrace China.
Well, the United States has not been in Subic Bay for decades. We have not had
not
a
base
there. But we certainly do call on Subic Bay. But we call on other ports in Singapore, mm-hmm. in Malaysia, increasingly in Vietnam.
Vietnam
has opened up Cam Ranh International Port to us. We've made our third visit since it opened earlier this year. So the United States will maintain their presence there. And you hear a very clear, strong conviction from the U.S. Pacific Command that we are not leaving.
Let's go to our listeners. We're talking about President Rodrigo Duterte of the Philippines. Maria Reza is with us from Manila. Karen Brooks is here from her monthly visits to the Philippines, keeping her well informed there, and Zachary Abuza. Stephanie's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. We've got international relations, strategic considerations, and a kind of death squad campaign against drug users inside the Philippines now, police doing a lot of it. Stephanie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was calling to kind of raise the issue of their Catholic faith in the Philippines. I was there a couple of years ago, and I just noticed it's just kind of it's prevalent everywhere.
Yes.
I think something above 90% of Filipinos are Catholic. So I was just interested about how Duterte's policies either coincide or clash with that Catholic faith.
Maria Reza, what do you say?
Strangely enough, again, there hasn't been a tremendous outcry against the number of people who've been killed in the war on drugs. And again, if you look from July 1 until December 20th, you're talking about more than 6,000 people. There is a climate of fear in this. And then you have look back on this. Why was there a war on drugs? Because as early as 2012, the UN's report on drugs actually said, the World Drug Report said that the Philippines, more than any country in East Asia, had the highest rate of methamphetamine hydrochloride, or the use of shabu, what we called here locally shabu. So this was a problem that festered beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. President Duterte zoomed in on this and put it with his war on crime, and this climate of fear that actually triggered has forced more than 940,000 people to surrender before they were either arrested or targeted by the police in the war on drugs.
Karen Brooks, do you see Filipinos just fed up with the growth in the drug trade and ready to accept whatever the president wants to endorse to put a lid on it?
Well, as Maria mentioned earlier, the president ran on a very clear and, in a sense, narrow platform of restoring law and order, eradicating the scourge of drugs and corruption slash fixing government, whatever that might mean. And so it really is that narrow platform that people are focused on when they say that they support him and his policies, and when he enjoys these 70-something percent favorability ratings in Philippine polling.
But extrajudicial killings, thousands of them, that's a new definition of law and order.
Yes, it is. But again, the president was very clear that this is the route he planned to take in the campaign. So I think part of his popularity is, in a sense, that you have a politician, I think for many Filipinos, who for the first time said what he means what he says, and has delivered precisely on what he promised.
Sumner in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. Sumner, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi. I wanted to make a couple of quick points and one suggestion. Number one, Duterte.
We got it, Sumner. Yeah.
An unstable, murdering twerp that and it remains to be seen. The Filipino traditionally been very close American people.
You're just breaking up on us, and I'm sorry for it. But the question there was whether I think from what Sumner has told us that we've got a lot of jobs that have been shipped to the Philippines, lots of call centers and more. And Zachary, the question there is whether the U.S. could put economic pressure on the Philippines on this law and order front to bring it back within sort of a judicial process rather than extra.
Well, they're going to have to, because this will have a trickle-down effect on the economy. It takes decades to build up the rule of law, and Duterte in 6 months has shot it to hell, quite literally. There is no due process. And, who is compiling these lists? There's no transparency.
I mean, the list of people to be killed, shot down.
Exactly. And what I keep on trying to wrap my hands around is at what point does this become a constitutional crisis? For example, if he's putting elected officials and members on the judiciary on these lists, all of a sudden you are starting to challenge the constitutional system of checks and balances.
Wait, is that happening? Are elected officials being targeted for death as well? Or that's a hypothetical?
Oh yes. There have been mayors who have been gunned down and other elected officials, and he's threatened members of the judiciary.
Maria Ressa, Filipinos are putting up with that?
Again, it's part of his promise on the drug war. He claims that the people he's targeted are all part of this what he calls a scourge. The problem that we have now is that he is all powerful at this point in time. He has a supermajority in Congress. Anyone who stands up to him is critical of him. In fact, there's one woman, a senator, who was running the Justice Committee at the Senate and challenged him publicly. She had investigated him for extrajudicial killings while he was still the mayor of Davao City. In the last few months, not only did she lose her position as head of that committee at the Senate, She's been essentially stripped of dignity through these Senate hearings that have moved into her personal life, and has really rendered almost anything she said irrelevant.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Philippines' controversial, confrontational President Rodrigo Duterte. He has turned toward China. He has been very aggressive in talking about how he doesn't need the United States, and he has led in his, half a year now in power there, a campaign against drug users and dealers that has left thousands dead, many extrajudicial circumstances in the Philippines. Filipino Americans, what do you think of this man? What do you think of the high support that he's achieved so far in the Philippines? Maria Reza is with us. She's CEO of the website Rappler, joins us from Manila today. Karen Brooks is with us, spent a lot of time in the Philippines, and continues to. Zachary Abuza is with us from the National War College in Washington. Right now with us as well from Seattle in the U.S. is Lucho Singh. He's a member of the Filipino-American Historical Society there, prominent member of the Filipino-American community there. He's known President Duterte since they were roommates in college, attended Rodrigo Duterte's inauguration. Lucho Singh, thank you very much for being with us today.
Yep.
Mr. Singh, are you there?
Pretty good.
Hi, thank you for joining us. Americans, many, are trying to figure out what to make of a president who talks in the rough way that this president does, even toward our own president, and who is overseeing the widespread killing of those alleged to be in the drug trade. You're a supporter of Mr. Duterte. Why?
One, people should know who is Mayor Duterte. When he was elected as a president, I said, everybody, you see what you get. One of the best things that to describe is the mayor is what Emil Horado, one of the best columnists in Manila Standard, described him today, who is Mayor Duterte. I have known the mayor for 61 years when he was still, we were in college at YMCA, Lyceum in Sambeda. And until he became a vice mayor and he was in charge by President Cory Aquino to be the in charge mayor of Davao City. When he became the mayor of Davao City, of 1.3 million people, he was able to see how to change in Davao City because he came from a masa, a poor Filipino person, down to earth. He's very down to earth, a poor man who has never been on the elite side. That is the person who become a president, which is surprising to everybody.
Does it bother you that he has encouraged police to shoot down and kill suspected drug dealers or users without trial, Mr. Singh?
Okay, now, the question is this way. The president did not order to kill or did not order to order the policeman to kill drug addict or drug dealer. It is the press himself. It is the local. You know, when they talk about extra disease or killing, let's look back before he was elected and after he was elected. It was the so-called society journalist, the elite of the Metropolitan Press and the Human Rights Report that feed the press in the Philippines. The Philippines is controlled by the Metropolitan five major press, which is controlled by the elite. The Philippine Star, the Philippine Inquirer, the Manila Standard, the Manila Times, the Tribune, that has been unsupportive with the president from the beginning.
Lucho Singh, I don't argue with you necessarily about that, but we've heard the president in his own words and recently saying that he has, by his own hand, killed
outside of a trial to encourage other police to do the same. So it's not as if he hasn't given the signal that this is fine by him, that it's okay.
Okay. Now, the answer, the question is down there. They should know who is Duterte. One, the President Duterte was born from a masa, which I call a canto boy, was described by Jurado. It is a hyperbole statement. That's how he is.
Hyperbole.
He creates a scenario, and then he changes his mind, and that is how he expresses himself, the word killing.
Lucho Singh Steba, Maria Ressa in Manila, is there any doubt in your mind that President Duterte has encouraged the killing that's gone on and that he was asserting that he had done a version of it himself?
His supporters will say it is hyperbole, but he's repeatedly stated it. He said it on video. He says it in large gatherings. He boasts about it, and he wants to encourage the police to follow his lead.
Let's go to Dawn in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Dawn, thank you very much for calling. You are on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, what is the future for this police force who is being trained and sent out to slaughter people like this? Not only does it seem like there's victims being slaughtered, you know, that you can't all be guilty, but this force, what do they do when this policy ends? What kind of life will they live?
Karen Brooks, you're there often. What do you say?
Well, I would like to pick up, I think, on what Mr. Singh was trying to convey, which I think there's a degree of a willing suspension of disbelief on the part of the public that I find reflected in these popularity surveys, which is really rooted in this loss of faith in the political establishment and the desire for change almost at any cost. And I think to the caller's question, the police have taken this cue from the public and have pursued the president's policy, which, again, I would agree, of course, with you, Tom, and with Maria, which has been very clearly stated, that they should pursue these alleged drug lords and pushers at any cost.
Even elected officials, though, we're hearing here, who are not drug pushers, presumably.
Well, the reason why extrajudicial killings, by definition, are a violation of law is that they cannot be, obviously, pursued consistent with human rights standards and any standard of due process. So we don't know who many of these people are who are showing up dead on street corners with cardboard signs saying drug pusher. By definition, the very nature of this kind of campaign is going to be open to the pursuit of vendettas that might be personal, might be political, and so forth.
But I also hear a kind of sympathy in your response to Lucho Singh, who's with us from Seattle, for Filipinos' difficulty in getting out from under the boot of some very powerful elites there who have had that power for a long, long time, Karen.
I think that's really the only way to understand the phenomena of President Duterte, because if you're asking whether Filipinos are bloodthirsty, don't care about human rights, hate the United States, want to pivot to China, I would say none of those things characterize either Philippine public opinion or, their historical attitudes. So I think the only way to really understand the phenomena of President Duterte, as is the case in other places around the globe, is that there is a very serious loss of faith in political elites and the political establishment, as Maria rightly noted earlier, in the oligarchs, in the people who have been governing and running the country for really centuries, not even just decades, that would explain the support and appreciation for someone like President Duterte, who, in many respects, like President-elect Trump, came to power on a promise of overturning the traditional order.
Rocky in Sumter, South Carolina. Rocky, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
I hate that you used my first name. We have a lot of family in the Philippines, and unfortunately, well, he is doing an act police and other people.
Rocky, you're breaking up right there. Lucho Singh, the gist I got from what Rocky's told us is if he criticizes Duterte, his family in the Philippines says, come on, this is what we need.
Yes, because right now, can I explain a difference between a drug addict Philippines and an American drug addict?
Yes, please.
Okay, now, let the whole world realize that in America, a drug addict, you can find it in the street in New York, in Seattle, in every area. They will just say, hello, good morning. They take, you know, whatever they take, a cocaine, and you call the cop, they go home, somebody loved them, they got a treatment center. But in the Philippines, when they found out it became a narco state, every drug addict in the Philippines is totally different. They go out and kill. That is the difference. Name me one family in the Philippines who will shelter a drug addict now. Even the church, even the oligarch, the millionaires, they cannot because they throw them out. Or once you become a drug addict in the Philippines, the whole family, that's why when they go to the street, you have no choice. Either you die or you protect yourself. That is the problem going on right now. The tricycle in Manila, in Luzon, in Visaya, as one family, are they allowed before to go out because they're so scared? The cops are supporting the drug addict, the elite. They are the narco dealers. But so before, they're roaming around the street, they rape, they kill.
Maria Reza, what do you say to that characterization of what's been going on in the Philippines, Maria? You're in Manila.
That's certainly the way President Duterte portrays it. And if we look at the report by the UN itself, as early as 2012, drug use, shabu, which methamphetamine, mm-hmm. hydrochloride, is in wide use. It's very cheap to get, and there are a lot of addicts. But even the number of people who are addicted is being questioned. President Duterte can name figures of 3 million to 4 million. The Dangerous Drugs Board, the number they give is about 1.8 million. So the reality, though, is that this is an issue that strikes at the heart of many poor and middle-class Filipinos, and this has led to his victory. I just want to pick up a few of the strands that you've brought up,
yes.
Which is on religion, right? The church has repeatedly condemned what is happening, but most Filipinos, citizens who are Catholic, applaud the war on drugs. They say that they feel safer, that there are less drunks in the streets. You, of course, have all the human rights advocates who are up in arms at the number, at the thousands who are killed. The question earlier about the police, what is happening when you unleash something like this? Well, it's almost like opening Pandora's box. What happens after you've cleaned it up? We can just look back at history. After martial law, after Ferdinand Marcos's rule, 21 years of that, it took almost a decade after those 21 years to bring back respect for human rights into the police force. What happens now? I mean, this is something that we're going to have to live through. And then the last strand was about Filipinos in the United States. If you go back to the Pew Global Attitude Survey, you can actually see from the numbers there that at times, I think 2 years ago, Filipinos actually liked America better than Americans like America.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a this is not, Karen said this earlier, you know, this is, if you ask Filipinos 6 months before Duterte took office, would they take these positions? Most likely not, which is part of the reason, you know, I live here, I'm a journalist who's been working here, I'm trying to understand the shift that has happened in our landscape, but this shows you the power one man has.
Do you think the Filipinos, Maria, do you think Filipinos would accept a divorce from the United States? And a kind of a realignment with China?
I think it will depend on the economy. I think if the economy does as well as it has, I mean, in our third quarter, our GDP growth rate was 7.2%.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, people will say that's a trickle-down effect from the last administration. But if it continues And populist policies are put in place, some of which President Duterte has laid down. If that continues, he'll have the support to do what he wants.
Barbara in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Barbara, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, I have a question. This man who was just speaking, Mr. Singh.
Yes.
He's living in the United States. Does he have children? And how would he feel if one of his children were shot down here with no investigation because they were suspected drug dealers? I have a feeling that these killings are not investigated thoroughly after these people are killed.
Yep.
Because most of them are very poor.
Lucha Singh, how would you feel, Barbara asked, if it happened to your child here in America? What do you make of the question? How would you answer?
Well, okay, assuming my son or my daughter is being accused in this country, okay, which is not, you know, there is no what we call a fake, you know, there's a system here that we do follow. That is the good part in this country. There's a system.
Yeah.
Same thing in the Philippines. There is a system that they follow, but the word right now is the exaggeration that they cannot accept what's happening. It's the masa who is the one affected, not the elite. Not the elite. The so-called journalist that Maria I'm talking about, because he has never corresponded or being close to the masa who is the one suffering. If there is 102 million Filipino in this country, there is 92 million, and most of them is only 98% are the masa, which are the poor people.
Lucho, stand by. Maria, are you missing the interest of the masses here, if I can put it that way?
No, I think we've reflected that correctly. But what I think you're seeing is through the different administrations from 1986, and ironically, this is the 30th. This is 30 years after the People Power Revolt in 1986, right? So most Filipinos, the 65% who live just at the poverty line, who are making a little more than $2 a day, they don't feel like their lives have been affected at all, that they gain nothing from the trickle-down effect from the GDP rates. So they want more.
They want more? Do they? And for now, they want it Duterte-style?
Certainly. That's the yes, he's only been elected by 16 million Filipinos because it was a five-way race, but he has a mandate to rule.
He's the president. He's got international relations in his power. He's got domestic lives in his power. Maria Ressa has joined us from the Rappler in Manila today. Maria, thank you very much for being with us there.
Thanks for having me.
Lucho Singh in Seattle, thanks so much for joining us today, Mr. Singh.
Thank you.
And Karen Brooks and Zachary Abuza, our great thanks to each of you for being with us with your insight into the Philippines and Rodrigo Duterte. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.